Welcome to Side by Side, a podcast where I, Robert Kwong, take you inside conversations with artists, creatives, healers, and warriors taking the charge in their transformational story. Today's guest is Jose Alejandro, a men's leadership coach who combines trauma-informed somatic healing with personal development. He is the co-founder of Modern Renaissance Man, a community where like-minded individuals can find connection and support. In our conversation, we talk about the state of masculinity today and the support men need so we can contribute to a better future for all. Next February, Jose will be co-hosting a men's retreat experience in the Amazon jungle called Rewilding the Man. This immersive experience combines indigenous cultural guidance, complete nature immersion, and leadership training in service of your transformation. Please check out this offering and stay tuned if you want to hear more about it. Jose, thank you so much for saying yes and agreeing, and also say hello to Sam for me. She was kind enough to chat with me first.
Yeah, well, it's an honor. I really appreciate you reaching out, the kind words, just a reflection about my work, and alone and work with Sam as well. Sam's says some beautiful things about you as well. So excited to dive in and just have a chat. If there's anything I could bring into the space, then we'll let it flow out. And Just really excited to connect.
Yeah, I love that we have, I believe, anyway, this is our first time having like a real long conversation that we have some things in common. So I'm really excited to dive in. So right now you're in Puerto Rico, and I believe that's where your family's from. Is that correct?
Yes. So I was born here. I was raised here until I was about six, which is a big marker in my life. That led me to where I'm at today, because when I was six, my parents split up. My mom moved to the States, so that was an adjustment period, you know, right when I was starting to make friends and all of that. And then I would come here once every year, pretty much for the summers, maybe 3 to 4 months a year. And then when I was 16, I got too cool for it. I stopped. Or I just had other stuff that I was distracted by. And I stopped coming. And then I started coming again in my 20s, kind of like for vacation and visiting my grandparents. And there's this deep pull to just come back to where I'm from. And Sam's not Puerto Rican, but just been blessed because she's been as excited to not only visit and come here, but also stay here. So we moved last May. And we've been here for over a year and a half now. So,
well, your journey and talk about your upbringing and how you used to visit, and then there was that dip. That's actually exactly what happened to me, because I came to the United States when I was 9 from China. Yeah. And early on, it was very important for everyone, it was like important for me to visit every year, make sure to see my grandparents, because it was only me and my mom coming to the United States. But as I got older, it sort of became like, well, we don't have to go every year. And anyway, I've had many times thinking about, you know, sometimes I wish me personally, you know, maybe I should have spent a little more time with some of my elders. But that's another story. It's kind of the thing you navigate as an immigrant, you know?
Yeah. Well, honoring you for, I just want to point out the word you said, elders. That's the word that it's been very important to me. And part of the reason why I moved to Puerto Rico as well, you know, there's a lot of older people, but not everyone's an elder, right? And I think for me, there was this deep calling to find the elder, just the elderhood stories, or just the elder wisdom from my grandparents, you know, different approach than how it was when I was visiting when I was a kid. You know, it's almost like grandparents, my grandmother's cooking for me, my grandfather is taking me out. Now there's like a deeper level of conversation where I have the opportunity to be here, reconnect with them, and really treat them as elders. You know, they don't get everything perfect. There's things that we don't see eye to eye on, but there's something beautiful about just treating them that way and kind of asking them about their perspective and their story and coming to the US and having my mom and all these different things. So I love that you use that word, because it's definitely I feel like there's a need for elderhood within all of us. I just want to share that, because it's a conversation I've been having, that oftentimes we think we need to be older to be elders, but we can move as elders, in our 20s and 30s and 40s, with this kind of
Yeah.
intention to give back.
That resonates with me. I sort of hear in that, like, there's a certain responsibility and a willingness to accept a certain role in your family or your community, that you're willing to be there for people in a particular way. And yeah, I mean, just because someone is older does not mean that they would want or is suited for that role anyway, certainly.
Right.
But yeah, absolutely. I think about that, especially as I got into my 20s, and there was like a rebel period where I couldn't think about my heritage. And then in my 20s, I found like there's this huge void in really making sense and having a story for me about my heritage, my story as an American and as a Chinese person, and all of that. And yeah, connecting with my ancestry and trying to honor them has been a big journey, which I know you do a lot of. And I love the way that you blend spirituality with like personal development. Were you always growing up, say you were a spiritual person, or I guess what are your
No.
roots with diving into
Yeah, great,
that?
great question. And I appreciate the observation. It's something that I definitely immerse myself in behind the scenes, and I try to weave it into my work without, I don't want to say allowing it to overwhelm, because that's my own perspective, but just without letting it be like the core focus of everything I do. Because a lot of my work is, a personal development, but embodied integration is really like the phrase that I like to use. There's a lot of, putting things into action and bringing into the body. And sometimes in the spiritual spaces, and I've done this as well, there's the receiving of the answers and like the insight, but there's not so much of that integration. So I try to weave those together as much as possible. And the answer is no, I haven't. It wasn't something that it was definitely something that my parents tried to instill in me. I think my grandparents more, but it was a very religious approach. Right. So I was baptized, confirmation, pretty much raised Catholic, went to Catholic school from 6th grade to 8th grade. And I just felt it just felt it didn't resonate at all. And I remember just feeling like just rebelling against it. So you use that word, right? Like rebelling against your culture. It was kind of like rebelling against my parents weren't so religious, and I could almost feel, I was very curious. I could almost feel that the whole reason that they put me into that world was because they thought it was the best thing for me, and that led me to kind of, rebelling even deeper against it, especially since things were kind of chaotic in my household. And I will say, for my early 20s, I considered myself atheist. So it was like just questioning everything. And saying all of it, bringing all of it to a practical, with a practical explanation. And it wasn't until I experienced spirituality that I actually shifted my perspective. And when I say that, I mean that there's a difference between religion and spirituality. I think religion can be dogmatic. It can be, this is the story that you need to believe in order to do right, or fit into this box of fill in the blank. In spirituality, one of my teachers, speaking of like as working with like spiritual, like indigenous cultures and stuff, what one of them once said, like, spirituality can't be taught, it can't be spoken, it can't be learned. It's something that we experience, and someone can guide us to experiences that have helped them experience spirituality. But it's not until like we experience it, and we could describe it completely different than someone else. Right? I think that was when things shifted for me. And one of my biggest spiritual experiences was definitely breath work. First time I did like holotropic breath work, it felt like 6 years of therapy and 2 hour session. And it felt like I had a spiritual experience, similar to a psychedelic experience. It was almost like my own spiritual experience. And I couldn't find a book to describe what it was, but it just felt like, oh, there's something bigger than me. There's something deeper to these constructs I've adopted as my identity. And there's no reason to take myself so serious. And at the same time, like being alive and living my purpose is serious. You know, it's like this duality that came from it. So that's kind of where it came from. But it wasn't until my late 20s when, or mid 20s when I really experienced spirituality and then went down that rabbit hole of my own spiritual journey and trying to figure out what that meant.
Yeah, the breath work, I was sort of observing it and hearing you talk about it from like online and things like that. And I always thought, boy, that is, when I'm ready, I want to do it because it's a certain type of somatic work, I believe, right? And, you know, as a trauma survivor, so many of us carry things in our bodies. And it's taken me a long time to really get as comfortable as I am now, even. And I still have a long ways to go. But going for that upper limit of being with yourself and the emotions that come up within your bodies, that's a newer thing that I'm still trying to understand. So I'd be curious to hear, because you facilitate in groups, I believe, breathwork sessions and things like that. What's been your experience now, you know, first benefiting from it and now like leading people into it? I'm wondering if how that, what your perspective is like, you know?
Great question. Well, I just want to say that I think most personal development work, even like when we think about books, podcasts, like they're all very informative and powerful. And that's literally probably the starting point for everyone, and also a big tool to guide us throughout our journey. It opens us up to new things. It helps us understand. It's almost like a window that's been opened, and we get to see a new possibility. And it allows us to learn new ways of being, but it's usually a top-down approach. So there's the shifting our mindset, or shifting or learning something new, and then the process of embodiment, right? And sometimes it can be unbearable, sometimes uncomfortable, and then after a while, unstoppable once we continue to create those habits. From what I've seen in my own journey, in my own body, in my own emotional intelligence journey, and just emotional transformation journey, is that regardless of what our mind believes, our body keeps the score. There's a great book called The Body Keeps the Score, and one thing I've realized, I got my bachelor's in psychology, but it wasn't until 6 years after gaining all that conceptual knowledge that I actually worked with a therapist and allowed myself to feel those emotions a bit more. And it wasn't until I started going to experiences that included somatic therapies and really included the body that I realized that, oh, the bottom-up approach is actually, it takes into account that there's a connection between the mind and the body, that there's memories in the body and trauma in the body and experiences and feelings associated with these thoughts in the body. And unless we do the healing with both together, we can't create the space for these new beliefs and these new things that we've learned to come in. In my relationship, Sam, and I talk about this often, it was one of the biggest catalysts for my journey, because I had learned a lot of things. And even in the beginning of that stages of that rough patch, I was consuming as much as I could about how to navigate the relationship better. But once we were in conflict, I was still having trouble actually doing the things that I had learned. It was like my body was not matching the thoughts that I had. So that's where it really started for me in my personal journey. I went to an experience. This wasn't a breath work, but it was a men's work, or a men's workshop. And I remember doing an exercise, like an anger release. And I was like, I'm not angry, right? And they're like, okay, great. Well, If you wait for something to make you angry, then you're probably waiting for something to make you happy. So let's think about something that's made you angry in the past, and maybe you're not angry. And I really allow myself to go there, kind of like a method actor. And I notice myself do this huge anger release, and my body feels so much better after. And I didn't think I was angry, but somehow I felt like I released anger through that process that was there and I wasn't aware of. And that just, it felt like so much weight had lifted off my shoulders. And that would just led me to a deeper process of like of inspiration of just I want to share this with other men. I want to share this with other people. So it's led me to being a teacher now, but every time we start, whether with Sam when we're leading when I'm leading with Sam or one-on-ones or just men on my own, I always say, you know, I'm not your guide, I'm not your coach, I'm not your healer. Like you are, I'm telling you, this is the tool that I've used. Here's how it works. Now, over the next hour, you get to like reclaim that birthright, do it on your own. And it's beautiful to see how people can heal themselves without sharing, having to talk about it too much, right? And just being in that space of like, I can be with the energy of people releasing anger because I've been there and I continuously go to those spaces. I never ask anyone to do something that I wouldn't do. I can be with those screams and cathartic moments because I have been there myself and I continue to allow myself to go there. So that's really been the journey. It's like it's easy to teach something that I've read from a book, but it's another thing to create a space for someone to experience a somatic release. Because it really takes it takes a lot of just being willing to do it ourselves. And last thing I'll say is there's a lot of breathwork techniques. There's a lot of breathwork teachers. It's easy to learn a sequence. It's another thing to be able to sit with you know, cathartic experience and help someone feel safe enough to go through that process. And it's still a journey for me. There's times where I feel wow, I was a little overwhelmed here. I need to kind of look at that and see what that means for me. So.
Thank you for sharing that. And thank you for your warrior spirit, I would say, for being able to lead people through these moments in their lives. It's certainly not everyone, I think, could actually hold that space the way that you're talking about. But partially, it's because you've been doing this work, right? And you talk about the body keeps a score and how it helps us regulate. And particularly with men, your work is focused on men's work. We have to think about a lot in how we process anger, how we process our emotions that we're not naturally taught to be able to process in a healthy way. And I see that this really benefiting people in such a massive way. So it makes me want to ask, you know, you talk about masculinity and both the toxic nature and also how to get into our more healthier forms of masculine expression. How would you describe like the state of masculinity today, and how would you cultivate moving from the ways that we've really fumbled the bag to being able to transform that into something better.
Great question, man. And it's, you know, it's a touchy subject because, you know, first I want to say that we all have our stories, our experiences, our trauma, our just paradigms, so many different things, contexts that consciously and unconsciously we have around the term masculinity, right? And not just the term, but actually the experience of it, right? So I think it's important to share that. And I'll start with my own experience with it in saying that my late grandfather, so my father's father, he passed when I was 3. My father never really had a strong relationship with him. He was pretty much absent. And he was and has continued to be referred to as like toxic masculine, as the like, you know, in Spanish, the mujeriego, the guy who's always with different women. And he died of liver disease. You know, it's like if you could find that stereotype, it's him. And I've shared this recently. He also was a perpetrator of domestic violence, right? And committed femicide, not with my father's mother, but with his wife after my father, right? And that's literally the most toxic expression that a man could do, is killing someone and killing their partner based on envy and jealousy and all these things. So I've had to heal that within myself. The shame that came with that, the shame that came with, even if we remove the word masculinity, the characteristics that we associate with masculinity, sometimes the word masculinity could be so have so much weight. It's really just a set of characteristics. Same as feminine has a set of characteristics, yin and yang, alpha, omega. And I had so much shame around those characteristics because I felt if I exhibit those characteristics, I'm like my grandfather. If I exhibit those characteristics, I might hurt someone. If I exhibit those characteristics, I might harm myself, my loved ones, the world. Right. So there was that shame there, which I also saw within my father. And before it was, I wasn't a conscious understanding. It was kind of just like a something I could see now, and I've had conversations with him. And on the side of my mom, my grandfather, who I have a beautiful relationship with now from her side of the family, he didn't want her to go to college. He wanted my grandmother always in the kitchen. So it was like a different expression of it, but very similar shadow aspects of the masculine. So how did that show up with my family? Well, my mom, throughout my life, and we've had this conversation now, so it's beautiful to see the awareness she has around it. She, because of the power that she felt like she lost when she was a kid, as a girl being told that she can't go to college when she was turning 18, she stepped into kind of like this trauma response of so independent to the point where she would not allow anyone to give her any perspective. And when I was a kid, she would express that in I'm disrespecting her because I'm raising my voice and I'm just like my father, I'm just like my grandfather. So that created a lot of shame within around that as well. And I'm not blaming my mom, but I think that that's the pendulum that is reflective of where we're at currently, right? So there has been so much impact and negative consequences to these shadow expressions of the masculine, to this unintegrated expression of the masculine, to this just generations of men really expressing themselves in ways that have harmed the feminine and all in nature, women, etc. But if you really go back to, and we kind of reflect, well, that means that men have always been like this. Masculinity has always been like this. Well, that's not true. In working with indigenous cultures, what I've seen is there's this deep reverence for the masculine and the feminine. And actually, before the empire eras in our world, the indigenous cultures that really saw the reverence in everything and everything is sacred, there's this respect for both those parts within ourselves and others. I mean, one of my teachers says before you become a shaman in their culture, you have to wed the inner husband if you're a woman and wed the inner wife if you're a man. So it's, what they mean by that is connect with the opposite expression of your energy. So I say that because here's what I think. I think in response to all of that damage that the shadow expressions of the masculine has created, there's been this pendulum swing to the other side of kind of throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And I've done that within myself. So just reflecting it back to what I just shared of like I cannot own those expression, those characteristics, because then that would equal something bad. When the reality is that there's a different paradigm. It doesn't have to be the asshole or the nice guy that lets go of any boundaries and values and commitment to, his mission. There can be this new paradigm where we honor both the masculine and the feminine within ourselves, we honor our true nature and treat everything with respect, where we are of service rather than self-serving, where we can be strong, have strong boundaries, communicate our boundaries, be unapologetically powerful and express our truth while also being compassionate, empathetic, and just caring and gentle for, ourselves, that inner child within ourselves and those things that we interact with. So I think that's where we're at, where there's a new paradigm emerging. And that's where I've found so much wisdom in, indigenous cultures, in my own spiritual journey, and just honoring those parts of ourselves as, we did before we wanted to conquer the world and kind of take over everything for the sake of our own selfish desires.
Man, thank you. And you just brought up so much to unpack, quite frankly. But one thing I'll start with is that I agree with you that there's this new paradigm shift that we a lot of people are trying to make about how to, in looking at all the issues, where's a better option? Where's the alternative in how we relate and connect with each other? And in my personal experience, I have seen when someone's only focused on their masculine or only focused on their feminine, that their energy can become so unbalanced that when it's the opposite sex relationships, it becomes so codependent. It's almost like, that saying, oh, this person completes me. And I'm sort of saying, wow, I don't know about that. because, oh, because this person has the masculine side that I am missing, or something like that, or there's something I cannot have that belongs, that is outside of myself. So, regardless of someone's sex or gender expression, I agree with you that finding balance, and definitely from my culture, that's a thing we talk about. And I remember my first coach, when I talked about finding balance, they said something like, that's impossible. And I was like, oh, uh-oh, because that is a big thing that I think about. But in our culture, we're basically kind of said like it's one way or the other sometimes. So thank you for opening up the space for someone to explore things beyond their comfort zone as a form of understanding themselves, as a form of achieving self-mastery in some ways. And there's that saying, like, I can't remember where I heard it, but the strongest man would be like a really powerful man with a great deal of self-control. Like that is someone with a lot of power, right? So anyway.
That one of my teachers says, be dangerous, but not a danger, right? And I think in that could be taken out of context, right? Why do men, women, anybody needs to be dangerous? Well, I think what that means when we go deeper into it is, cultivating strength within ourselves, right? When we think dangerous, we think physically dangerous. I'm thinking, we cultivate strength in our mind, cultivate strength in our body, cultivate strength in our hearts emotionally, right? Like you said, control. And then not a danger means it's kind of like martial arts, right? We unconsciously believe all of these things, but consciously our programming and triggers around certain words kind of takes context out of it, and we want to reframe it. But think of martial arts. I would say out of anyone who is least likely to get into a fight, someone who really honors and has a practice of martial arts. Because number one rule in any martial arts dojo is don't get into a fight, right? Don't start a fight. It's honoring these practices so you can cultivate strength within yourself, not just physically, but mentally, without having to use it, right? It's like a warrior in a garden rather than a gardener in a war. Because there's this reverence for the power, and it makes me think of nature. That's another thing that I've learned from just connecting to nature, is that nature is brutal. It's beautiful, but it's also brutal. I did a 4-day vision fast in Death Valley for 4 days. No food, just water, all on my own 2 years ago, and I remember. It was like this beautiful scenery, like wow, what am I doing here? Holy shit. It reminded me of, just like how small I am in the world. And take the wrong step, there's a rattlesnake that can bite you and kill you. And there's this respect we need to have for that duality in nature, and that duality lives within ourselves. And I think the opposite is true from what most of us believe. We think that if we push away those, this goes into shadow aspects conversation as well. We think that when we push those things away, when we push, the feminine away, the masculine away, that we are in control. The reality is that we're not. We need to integrate it. We need to understand it. We need to bring it together. And I just want to propose the word harmony instead of balance, because oftentimes balance, we think of a scale and it has to be even on both sides. And I think with regards to masculinity or femininity, for that matter, regardless of sex, gender, orientation, it doesn't matter. There's a different harmony for each one of us. Masculinity within me might look hard, might feel harmonious against beliefs of what society tells me it should be. And it might look differently harmoniously within you. And I think that's what masculinity and femininity is really about. When we look at it as characteristics, is how can we let go of any stories, attachments, and codependencies, whether that's avoidant or anxious attachment to masculinity or femininity, to find out what it looks like to be in harmony for us. And I think regardless of whether we accept it and like over-identify with masculinity or push it away as something dangerous, both of those are just as harmful. And we're seeing that in men today. When men push away their masculinity, oftentimes they look like they're always nice. They have no boundaries, but deep within, I see this all the time. The nicest guys are usually the ones with the most resentment, anger boiling from within, maybe deep hatred or dislike for women, because there's this resentment around like, I can't create the life that I want to live, right? So just thought really important to share that piece just from being around men and seeing both of those extremes impacting them in a way that's not fruitful for any of us.
Especially when those markers that we're seeing how we should behave or perform is all
Right.
externalized, is based on how other people, how we can get things from other people, right? And then we cater, it becomes a performance. And you're so right that there's the nice guy paradigm that I think is being like broken down, which I think is very important actually, because that is not always the same as an honest guy, for example, right? And so thank you. And also thank you for being someone who's like put his foot into the arena for doing this type of work.
Appreciate that.
And I want to back up a little bit because earlier you talked about the subconscious, working with the subconscious, which I think comes up a lot when we're trying to break these patterns that are a little bit kind of like, oh, I can't figure out. I want to break the pattern, but something's just not working out, or I have this inner resistance. And a lot of it winds up being about what we're not conscious of already. So you had an Instagram live conversation with your mentor, I believe. Is his name Manati?
Maestro Manari, he's a spiritual leader.
Okay, cool. Well, that conversation, I mean, you can dive into a lot better than I can, but the theme of it was around how to work with your dreams and being interpreting and guiding your dreams as it relates to our subconscious. So I was wondering if you could dive into that a little bit and why that conversation is interesting and important to you.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, I appreciate you asking and for watching the live. Manari's, so I was just saying he's the spiritual leader of the Zapata community, which is one of the four indigenous tribes in Ecuador. They're also partially in Peru as well. And he's also top 100 climate or environmental protection activists in the world too. So he's really active in just protecting the Amazon, deforestation,
Wow,
and all of those things.
amazing.
But the core of his work is around dreams, right? Oftentimes when we think of indigenous cultures in South America, the focus is like plant medicine, ayahuasca, and all these things. But he actually, even though he does work with that, his primary focus is dreams, because we all dream, and if we you don't dream, then it, you know, there's an opportunity to explore, you know, where maybe there's some disbalance in our bodies, our minds, that aren't allow us to dream. I know for me, I wasn't dreaming for about 2 years, and then he helped me really find out why that was. And it was really that I was dreaming. I was just forgetting all of my dreams. And then he helped me start kind of creating space for me to remember by anchoring into a specific moment or scene that could help me remember the rest. And I say that because in that conversation, you know, our dreams typically, you know, their cosmovision, their belief is that the, and I'm a big believer that regardless or not, we kind of fully adopt those beliefs. There's wisdom in them that we get to really learn from. What they believe is that you're entering the spirit world, or your true self, the truest self, through dreams. But at the very core, what he was saying in that live and what he taught me is that our subconscious is reflected in our dreams. The things that we either don't look at, are unaware of, or sometimes shove away in a part of our mind somewhere, our dreams tend to reflect that. And they're not designed to be taken literally, but they are an expression that our imagination and different symbols just reveal messages. You know, if a snake is, you know, strangling you, for example, in a dream, it could be that a part of you feels suffocated by something that's going on in your life. So it's never to be seen as literal, but it's just amazing me once I started to really like work with him and get his support interpreting my dreams, how much of the answers to my real world problems were revealed in my dreams, you know, and things that I thought were just like a really weird scene, and like how the hell did what was this dream about? He'll ask me a powerful question that just makes me realize like, oh wow. This is probably reflective of a part of me that wants to express itself, but maybe has an opportunity that hasn't had the opportunity to do so. And I think nature does the same thing. So I'll just say this as well, that you know, when we take men out to wilderness rites of passages, we call it a vision fast because you're out there for 4 days in nature and you're not seeing a vision, and maybe you might, but you're not seeing a vision as in like a psychedelic vision. You're usually observing nature, and in nature, there's parts of you that are revealed. So when you come back and you share your story about what you saw, the other men around the fire can say, oh, it sounds like that caterpillar maybe was a reflection of what you're navigating in your life. Or maybe this leaf, the way you told the story sounds like, you know, it represented something like falling away in your life. And the same thing happens with dreams. You know, we can interpret in our own way, but usually something's revealed in them that's deeper than the stuff we're consciously aware of.
Absolutely. And I'm also someone who could not for the life of me remember my dreams until I spoke with someone and like, yeah, you're just not remembering them, but you actually dream a lot. In fact, you just push them all away. And I was like, great, that's another thing for me to dive into now. But yeah, that's also in kind of having to explore this a little bit. It's so interesting how through like creative and creative expression or even dream expression, our subconscious can actually tell us a bigger truth that we have that is difficult for us to like look at in the everyday life, right? So thank you for kind of explaining that a little bit. Okay, lastly, or maybe not lastly, I want to get as much out of you as possible, but I know you're next year you're organizing and planning Amazon Jungle experience that's a men's experience. I would love for you to just talk a little bit about why you're doing it and what kind of person could really benefit from that experience.
I appreciate you asking that. So, you know, like I said, most of the time, and I've experienced these as well, and they're powerful, but you know, sometimes Amazon experiences or retreats like this tend to have a focus on plant medicine or ayahuasca. The focus here is really to connect men back to their nature. So this is a very like integrative approach that we're bringing. I'm collaborating with my good friend Brendan, who's an intimacy coach for both men and women, but I met him through the men's space. So he's done a lot of work in the men's space and with Manari. So I was there in April. We had a private weekend experience, both Brendan and I, with Manari. And it was just so, it was so powerful to witness just this culture stripped away from all modern like societal paradigms and expectations and technology, how they operated, how they cared for each other, their level of empathy, awareness, level of presence, and just grounded connection to their hearts and to the moment. And there was also, just I noticed that within me, just being there a couple of days and disconnecting and being like in the center of probably the most wild place we could go to in the world, right? The Amazon. I noticed myself like reconnecting to my own nature. So the whole intention of this journey really was inspired by that trip. We went with the intention of like, we can co-create something here. I think this will be really powerful. But we left with even more inspiration to create something that a space where men could come connect to their true nature in Mother Nature. So the underlying intention behind that is most of us believe that or are made to believe that connecting, and this ties our whole conversation together, that connecting with our inner wild and embracing those parts of ourselves, whether it be masculine or those shadow aspects that we want to tuck away and hide, that if we embrace those, we will be dangerous, that we will harm the planet, harm our communities, harm ourselves. But the irony is that the further away we move from an understanding of our true nature, the more of a negative impact we have on the world because we're unaware of our power. We're not fully expressing our truth, and we're doing so with a closed heart. So this trip is really for purpose-driven men who are committed to unapologetically expressing their truth and owning their power with an open heart for the sake of themselves, their community, and the world. And the four pillars of the journey are an indigenous culture immersion, a nature, like a complete nature experience, self-transformational journey, and connection and brotherhood. Because this last piece, connection and brotherhood, I've found that one of the most powerful things in my journey has been surrounding myself with other like-minded individuals, but even more specifically men, that can hold me accountable and father me into the standard of the man I want to be without judgment, right? And we're including this part as a way to really bring men together to experience that while also having their own individualized journey. So it's gonna be a powerful experience. It's happening February 6th to February 13th. And the focus isn't plant medicine. The focus is connecting to nature, sober, aware, stripping ourselves away of all of, modern world's conditioning technology, not to become hunter-gatherers, but to understand the value of coming back to ourselves as sovereign beings and bringing our truth into the world to make, the modern world that we do live in a better place, something that has more meaning than just creating an app to get people numbed out on ads, but creating things that, maybe use technology to actually better, our world and our community.
Yeah, thank you for bringing this track of mentorship for hopefully we have more and more of that, especially when you talk about so many of us brought up in like the absentee fair weather masculine role models. So thank you for bringing this like possibility for us to connect with guidance and mentorship that often so many of us just grew up missing it. So if they want to find more information about you, this program, and anything else that you're going to be hosting coming up, where can they find you online? Where do you hang out?
Yeah, well, Instagram is probably the best place to find me and to learn more about all of this. So you can follow me at @RJOSE_Alejandro. And if you want to learn more about my work with men and being part of a community of men that are from all different backgrounds, sexes, orientations, all of it, you know, Modern Renaissance Men, the MRM Official, is a great place to learn more about Modern Renaissance Men and just the work that we're doing with the community and fathering each other from a place of, from an open-hearted place, you know, because we all crave that within ourselves, and that our inner child craves that. And we can't only rely on our partners to be, you know, the person that holds all of our emotions, the person that holds all of our thoughts, all of our experiences in life. Sometimes we need a safe space where we can fall into our feminine, because other men are kind of holding that container for us. So it's an invitation for any man. And if any woman's listening, you know, Christmas is around the corner. So this is a good gift for a man in your life. And
yeah. Yep, exactly. So no time like the present. Awesome. It was so nice chatting with you, and this was such a rich conversation. I hope we get to do this again.
Likewise, sometime. Brother. It was a real pleasure. Beautiful questions, and just an honor to be here.
Thank you.
And have this conversation with you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for tuning in. And if you'd like to connect with me, please reach out at www.robertkwangcoaching.com. And also feel free to reach out to me on Instagram at @robertkwangcoaching.